All right. Hey, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of SaaS Boss. And today I'm excited to talk to Michael Cardamone, whose last name can be pronounced as Cardamone if you were in Italian, right? Hey, Michael, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Share with us a little bit more about what it is that we're going to talk about today.
Yeah, so I figured I'd share a little bit. I always like kind of keeping these pretty tactical, so they're helpful for founders. And yeah, I've spent 6 years now building Forum Ventures, which used to be kind of Accelerprise, and we recently rebranded. But we've had the pleasure and kind of good fortune of working with over 200 early stage pre-seed B2B SaaS companies and have helped a lot of them through the fundraising journey. So I figured it could be helpful to kind of share some of the learnings around kind of raising that first, seed round or pre-seed round and kind of how to think about the process and the amount to raise and the strategy and all that. Thought that might be helpful. And I've had a lot of data points to learn from on that.
I love it. And actually, I am coming from like ground zero to this topic because I primarily work with bootstrap founders and all of my companies. And I'm growing a couple of companies with my husband as well. So we're all bootstrapped. So this is
Nice.
something that definitely I would love to learn more. And to dive right into this, tell us which companies primarily you think would benefit from just raising around, because what I come from a marketing and growth background, and oftentimes when I coach some founders, they're like, I am gonna think about doing a fundraising, and I'm like, okay, what's the purpose, right? And they're like, I want to fund the development side of the product, and that's pretty much it. I'm like, so what about the growth and the marketing? Like, okay, you're gonna have the product, but and then you're gonna spend 6 months figuring out how to get it in the hands of the user. So like, I'm coming from the growth perspective. So like, okay, you're gonna have the product, and then what? So where do you see majority of your, people that you worked with and companies that you worked with? What stage they're at, and at what point do you think it is time for them to think about?
Yeah. So obviously, raising money and venture capital is not for every business. In fact, it's probably not for most businesses. I think where it makes sense, and then I'll get into the stage that they tend to raise, but where it makes the most sense is if you think the opportunity ahead of you is kind of quote unquote venture scale, or if there's an opportunity to build a massive business, like, billion plus type business, and you have the ambition and desire to try to build that sort of business. Oftentimes, you're going to need funding to get there. Not always, obviously. Like big businesses have been built without raising capital. But yeah, if you have that ambition, and then the last piece is like if you're in a market where it has like winner take all or winner take most type dynamics and it's competitive, then oftentimes like raising money can allow you to move faster than other companies in the space and therefore be a big benefit for you if it's got that sort of market dynamic. So yeah, I think it's a big function of like, what are your personal ambitions? What type of company do you want to build? How big is the market opportunity? And then what are the market dynamics? And are those market dynamics kind of such that it makes sense to raise money and try to move as quickly as possible to capture market share instead of your competitors doing it?
I like how you mentioned that it's also if the founder has ambition and desire, because I talked to a couple of founders and they didn't have ambition and they didn't have the desire to
Yeah,
go
and it's
that
not
route.
that, and look, like founders can have plenty of ambition to build a bootstrapped and like big company, but like it's a different type of company and mindset to want to build, of a company that's raising venture rounds to like fuel high growth. Like that's just not for everyone. Not everyone wants to build that type of company. And so, yeah, I think there's plenty of great business built with ambitious founders, but I think it's a different. It's just like personal preference of like what type of business do.
So let's say I am a SaaS company who has product market fit. I have, let's say, a couple of hundred paying customers, and I am ready to raise a seed round. What do I do? What are my next steps?
Yeah. So first of all, I don't think every company needs to even be that far along to raise a seed round. Like we see everything from zero revenue to, what you just described raising seed rounds. And so it's less about a specific customer number or a specific amount of revenue. And it's more about can you with like clarity and conviction talk about, how your market's evolving and how you win in that evolving market and then why that if you win, it's going to be a massive company. And then think about what are all the risks associated with your business that you, or at least perceived risks that investors might conjure up in the conversation. And then what data points do you have investors get more comfortable around those risks. And sometimes customers and revenue is a big part of that, but it doesn't always have to be that. It can be other data points or signals that get investors comfortable around underwriting certain risks that they perceive around your business. So just to caveat that around, like, the stage can be mixed of, like, you know, all the way from, and it also depends on, like, the background of the founder. You know, have they had a past of kind of executing in whatever role they were in? Do they have experience in their industry and connections in their industry? So a lot of that factors in as well, obviously. But as far as, like, tactical steps around how you go about it, I think first it's coming up with, like, how much do you want to raise and why that amount? And then depending on how much you want to raise, I think will then dictate, like, what types of investors or funds you go after, and then build it. Basically, you want to run it like a sales process. Like, we've found on average, our companies that want to raise a seed round have to do, like, 40 plus kind of intro meetings to get to a term sheet. So you need to build, like, a pretty good top of funnel. You need to dedicate a lot of time to it. You want to condense the meetings in a short amount of time to really run it like a process and help create momentum and urgency during the process. It's a sales process, just like any other sales process. And you want to run it that way. And I can talk more about, like, kind of, you know, how to go about it. But that's the initial step, is, like, figure out how much you want to raise and why, and then, you know, start to find investors through, you know, AngelList or Signal or Crunchbase. There's an increasing amount of tools and platforms out there for founders to find investors that are a potential fit for their stage and company type. And so you want to start building out that list and then figure out how you're going to navigate to those investors.
And do you go to them one by one?
Yeah, I don't recommend, like, mass outbound emails. I find that they don't get very good response rates. I think you, like, increasingly, especially with COVID, like, investors are more open to receiving cold emails, but I think it needs to be, like, a very direct and personalized individual cold email that's, like, tailored to that investor. So unfortunately, I think you're just going to have a lot more success if it's a one-to-one email, or you can navigate through an intro from someone in your network.
You mentioned to get to a winner, you need to go through, like, 40 plus. So what are some ways for us to improve the chances and, like, not spending as much time? Because it is taking a lot of time to prepare everything, to have the meeting, and then, like, just a lot of mental power. Yeah. What are more successful companies doing to get, you know, faster to there?
Yeah. Yeah. Look, fundraising always takes more time than you think it's going to take, or almost always. And it takes a lot of mental energy. So, yeah, I mean, there's a few things you can do. One is prep and practice people who you trust, who are friendlies, and, like, really nail the narrative and the pitch, and then be really dialed in around kind of all the things that people are going to want to see. So, like, we recommend a lot of our companies kind of put together, you know, a little bit of, like, a data room, which has all the things, like, customer contracts, it has your pipeline report, it has, like, all the things investors are going to ask for along the way, that if you just have it readily available, A, you look like you're on it, and B, it just, like, shortens the, just like you want to shorten a sales cycle, like, the more information you have at your fingertips that you can kind of share on demand, the quicker that process will go. And so that's one way. And then the other is condense the meeting in a shorter amount of time. So it's still a lot of meetings, but at least you're kind of doing it over a shorter amount of time. And that will inherently kind of create urgency and momentum in the fundraise, because you're just having a lot of conversations. So that's part of it. And then the other piece is, like, be relentless about every conversation you have. Like, take time afterwards to really think about, like, what are the questions they asked? What are the things they seem hung up on? What are the risks they're worried about? And if you don't feel like you nailed the answers to those, like, really think about those, go back and, like, write those answers out, and, like, run those answers by other people and get feedback. So you're constantly iterating and improving on the pitch as you go through the meetings. So, you know, and I say that, you know, part of the strategy around this would be, like, you don't want to go to, you know, Sequoia for your first meeting. Like, you want to have, you want to have funds that would be great to partner with, but, like, aren't, you know, your dream investor in the early meetings, so that you have room to kind of iterate and practice and kind of understand where they're hung up, what risks they're worried about, so that you can really build out kind of answers to those. And it could be even written out, like, here are frequently asked questions and here's how we think about them. Or it could just be you have them ready and, like, you know, to talk about when people bring them up in future conversations.
Great thought process there. Going back to what you earlier said, mentioned, how do you come up with the amount to raise? Just, you know, this is the first step that you mentioned, right? But it's pretty, you know, kind of like lots of things going to.
Yeah. So one of the things that I see a lot of founders do, and it's a good way to think about it, but it's not the right way to portray it or narrate it when you're talking to investors is like really understand like what do you want to accomplish over the next, call it 24 months, and what do you think you're going to need from a resource, team, you know, marketing spend standpoint to get to those milestones, and then how much is that going to cost? So that's like an initial way to think about like what's the initial amount you want to raise. That's hard to do when you're an early stage company. You're still trying to figure out your ICP. Like, you don't really know what the sales funnel metrics are going to look like. You're not really sure what go-to-market strategies, like, you know, that's hard to do. So a lot of times it's more a function of like how much momentum do you have as a company, and like, you know, how big is the market opportunity? How fast do you need to move? And you want to make sure you're raising enough to kind of get you to the milestones you want to get to for whatever that next step is. It could be to the Series A, or it could be to like get profitable. And then the amount you're going to raise is going to dictate valuation more than almost anything at this stage. Like, it sounds ridiculous that that's what valuation is based at seed stage, but it's really like all of these rounds get done at basically like 15 to 25%. On average, it's like 19, 20%. Like, if you're raising 2 million, it's just most often going to get done at 8 to 12, or, you know, on average around 10. Like, it's just how it is. And so the more you raise, the higher the valuation, which has its own implications, pros and cons to it. But yeah, the lower you raise, like, that starts to break, the ownership starts to break down a little bit, because then you're going after smaller funds and angels who care less about ownership targets. But like, institutional seed rounds and the funds that lead those rounds tend to care a lot about ownership. And so a lot of the valuation is just driven on the amount you're raising. So part of what to think about around how much to raise is like, what do you think the valuation should be? And then is that enough money to get you to the milestones you want to get to like raise an A, let's say, and talk about like, hey, we're raising X amount to get to X milestones, not we're raising X amount to, you know, get 18 months runway or 24 months of runway. Even though like that's the amount of time you want, but it's more around getting to certain milestones within that time frame.
You mentioned lead investor. Tell us a little bit more about.
Yeah, so there's multiple ways to raise a seed round. The most common is you go out and you pitch a bunch of funds and try to find a lead investor, and then who's going to be the one like setting the terms, oftentimes writing the biggest check, sometimes taking a board seat if it's a priced round, and then you kind of fill in around the lead investor. So, you know, if you're raising a $2 million round, the lead investor might come in and 1 to 1.5 of that. And then you kind of fill in around with smaller funds or angels. So that's the most common way to raise like an institutional seed round. A lot of times you don't need a lead though. Like, you could just raise, you know, what a lot of people call party rounds, where, you know, a bunch of smaller funds, you kind of just like set the term based on like average, you know, 20% dilution or so. And so you just tell people like, we're raising 2 on 10 on like a safe, and people just come in and you can kind of do it on a rolling basis. You know, 50K, 100K, 250K, 500K checks from funds or angels, and just kind of piece it together without ever having an official lead investor. Usually when that happens, it's done on safes or convertible notes versus a priced round. But that's kind of the two different structures of rounds that we see happen a lot at seed.
What are some of the more desirable terms for the SaaS, for the company, the owner? And how much do you think, like, what is involved? Like, how much company do I, you know, give away and stuff like that?
Yeah. So yeah, like I said, there's either priced rounds or safes are the most common. Some people still use convertible notes. On average, if you're raising, you know, a $1.5 to $3 million kind of seed round, you're giving up, you know, in the 20% range on average. Like I said, sometimes it can be like 15%, sometimes a little bit lower if you're a really hot company, but you know, often it's like 15 to 25% with the average being about 20%. And then the rest of the terms are all, you know, fairly standard, at least in like geographies where there's some semblance of a tech hub. Like, obviously in some geographies, we see people doing terms that are not like overly common anymore in places like San Francisco or New York or Toronto or some of the places that were we're often investing in. But yeah, and then if you're raising a priced round, like there's board dynamics and like how the board is structured, which is something to pay attention to. You know, oftentimes, you know, it'll be like the founder, the lead investor, and then they want like a third independent board member who has to be approved by both parties. But what ends up happening is like the fund will often say like, oh, here's someone from our network who looks like a perfect fit on paper that we think could be the third board member. And the founder says, yeah, they look great. Like they have a ton of experience in this space. And so the board then becomes that three-person group. And really like that person is kind of very close to the fund and would often probably just vote aligned with the fund. So you just have to be careful around like board dynamics and what that looks like. It could also be a really good thing if the person's great. So, but that's another kind of term or part of the round that you have to kind of pay attention to. A lot, you know, there's a lot of different nuanced terms within these rounds, but like those are the, you know, dilution, what size the option pool is another one that we often see kind of negotiated around, you know, how do you need a 7% option pool, 10% option pool, 15% option pool. And a lot of that is just dictated by like how many kind of senior hires do you think you're going to need to make between now and the next round? And how much equity do you think it's going to take to kind of to recruit them? So that's another piece that impacts dilution quite a bit.
Talk a little bit more about dilution.
Yeah. I mean, basics are when you start a company, you know, there's a bunch of common shares and the founders own all or most of the common shares. And then usually like there might be some option, you know, some set aside initially for an initial option pool. Some companies do that, some don't. And then when you raise money, if it's a priced round, you're issuing new shares, investors are buying those shares at some price per share. And then they come in as like a new class share. So usually they come in as like preferred shares, which will have in, you know, today is like 1x kind of liquidity preference on like a downside scenario, but basically functionally the same as a common stock in a good case scenario. And then on a safe, it's basically like a document that's like an agreement for future equity. So you invest some amount at some cap, you know, with also a discount usually built in. And then when you raise your first priced round, that safe converts in at, you know, the lesser of the cap or the discount to whatever the valuation is on the priced round. So that's how the safe would work. And then yeah, dilution, it just means like you get a bunch of capital and in exchange you give up some amount of equity in your company, and you as the founder then less of something that hopefully is then worth more and can grow faster because you have a bunch more resources. So it's the trade-off of bootstrapping versus raising money is, you know, do you truly believe raising that money will allow you to move faster and build something worth more quicker than it otherwise would if you just bootstrapped it and kept the equity?
What would you recommend the preference? You mentioned price versus safe round. So what's better for the founder? What's better for the fund?
Yeah, at seed stage, like call it like a $2 million round. I think we see about 50-50. I think there's pros and cons to both around like speed of getting safes done. And if you don't have a lead investor, like it's hard to kind of pull together a priced round if there's like a bunch of smaller checks. So it just depends. If you have like a traditional kind of lead investor who's taking most of the round and setting the terms, like it's probably just better to do a priced round and convert everything in especially if you have safes from like, you know, accelerators or pre-seed funds ahead of the seed round. But yeah, it's, you know, there's pros and cons to both. Smaller rounds, I would say like safes tend to be easier just because, you know, price rounds just take a little bit longer, a little bit more legal costs, a little bit more paperwork. And often if you're raising like a small, like a 500K round, it's not like a lead investor dynamic. It's usually more of a party round.
Where do you see majority of the founders make mistake with that? I'm pretty sure that you're going to have a bunch of stories and you mentioned already one of them, like the board, if the fund suggests another person to have the board seat, then you need to be careful around that. What are some other stories?
Yeah, I think it's just being, you know, one of the things, it's an interesting time right now in early stage. Like you read on TechCrunch every day, all these crazy rounds at crazy valuations. And I think founders oftentimes get fixated on like, how did that company raise that with this revenue? And like, I have more revenue than them. I don't understand. Like, and I think what they need to realize is like, it's not a specific bogey around like a specific revenue number. And then all of a sudden you're going to magically be able to fundraise. Like it's much more nuanced than that. And so, you know, I think founders really need to think about the narrative. They need to think about like, okay, every investor says they want to invest in a great founder. Like, what does that actually mean? Like, it's such BS. It's like, you know, there's plenty, you know, you could look at plenty of examples. Like Honey is a good one. They sold for whatever, $4 billion. Like those, I think they had started and not really worked out with like four or five companies before they started Honey. But like they were, you know, obviously great founders. They built a $4 billion company, but it wasn't obvious in the first four that it didn't work out. So like, what does being a great founder actually mean? And I think, you know, the way I think about it and the way I think a lot of investors think about it is, one is like, you know, do you like, would you work for this person? And what they're really thinking is like, will this person be really good at recruiting great people around them? And a lot of that comes down to like, again, what I said before around, can you talk with clarity and conviction around how your market's evolving, why you're going to win, and like in a way that gets people excited about what you're building and excited about the potential for it and how big it can get. Like, you know, I think that's one trait. They want to look for someone who, quote unquote, kind of obsessed with the business. And that doesn't mean you're working constantly or 90 hours a week. Like everyone has a life and you need a balance, but it means like you're thinking about your business all the time. And like, if they ask you questions around, you know, what's the biggest customer in your pipeline, or like things that as a CEO of an early stage company where you don't have a ton of customers, like you should know off the back of your hand because you should be obsessing about like how you close that customer. Like they look for things like that. So part of it is like team and you as a founder, how are you presenting? Can they picture you being able to recruit really great people? Do you have data points to prove that you've recruited great people in the past around you? Because that's such a big part of it at the early stage. So I think that's part of it. And then I think a lot of it is like market dynamics. So just, you know, like I said, like who else is in the market? How competitive is it? How fast do you need to move? Like what happened recently, or like why now that is creating this opportunity where maybe it wasn't an opportunity even a year or two ago. And so they'll look a lot at that. So I think one of the mistakes founders make is like, they think because I have a certain number of customers, a certain number of revenue, it'll be easy to fundraise, and they don't put enough effort and energy into all the other things that investors will care about and be judging them on and judging their company on. And they go in and just say like, yeah, we've got traction and we've got customers. And then they get frustrated around the fact that they're not fundraising. So I think that's one mistake. Another, like I said, is like they go in and say, we're raising X amount to get 24 months of runway, but they hadn't really thought about what are the milestones you can get to with that money, and how are you going to get there, and talk about it in that and frame it that way versus like, you know, saying it's going to cover our costs for 2 years, but like not really thinking or having like clarity around like, here's what we want to prove out with this money and like how we're going to get there. And like, we see a clear path to doing that. So again, just nuanced around like how you frame things. Because reality is like first time founders who haven't fundraised before, like don't know all of the lingo and all the things investors. So it's such a disadvantage. So I think it's really just like repetition, practice, and just understanding like what are the things they can.
Is this something that your company helps with?
Yeah. So we, you know, we have a pre-seed program where we basically act as like an extension of your founding team. You know, it's a 4-month program and we do an initial 100K investment. And then we work really closely with you on, you know, both go to market and like helping with customer intros, helping to like do pipeline reviews and help you really nail your ICP and think about like, what are the go to market strategies? We bring in a lot of mentors to talk about a lot of different topics, probably one to 2 days a week. And then we work really closely with you, fundraising strategy, your narrative around that, getting your data room ready, like getting you as prepared as possible for those meetings, and then helping to line up those meetings. So then we'll do like an investor week where we'll probably line up, you know, 30 to 60 opt-in meetings with investors when we feel like you're ready to fundraise. And then we also have a seed fund, so that allows us to like invest in companies that both are coming out of our program but also outside of our program, where we'll invest in like, you know, more institutional kind of seed round. So I'll call it like $1 to $4 million seed round, where we're writing like 100 to 600 or 650K checks into those rounds. And then we'll help you out of that fund and with the companies we're investing in that fund, really think through like, okay, what are the milestones you need to get to go from seed to A? And how can we kind of leverage the community and network and all the resources we've built to help you along that journey? So those are the kind of two ways and two stages that we support founders and work with them.
Anything I haven't asked you yet, but should have?
You covered a lot of it. Fundraising is always challenging. There's a lot of dynamics just on the investor side that like founders don't often know about as well, but just like how they think about it, like if it's a new partner versus a, you know, partner that's been there for a while, or a new fund versus a older fund, and like how they think about kind of sizing the opportunity. So there's a lot to talk about there, but I think this covered a lot of the kind of basics around, you know, just how to get started with fundraising, how to think about it, and how to kind of, you know, work on the narrative and the pitch.
Cool. And if people are potentially looking for your help, where would they go to?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at MG Cardamone or on our website at forumvc.com.
Awesome, Michael. Thank you so much for your time. It's been my pleasure.
Thank you. Appreciate it.